Mama, just kill the man. Put a gun against his head.
I'm Christine Kraft. I'm in for Drex tonight, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock. The phone number is area code 415-808-810-8080810. And I'm delighted to welcome, as he's on so often and most enjoyable, Tim Sika of CelluloidDreams.net. That's right, isn't it?
That's correct. Hi, Christine Kraft.
Hi, Tim.
I haven't talked to you for a while.
I know, and I'm very excited about this. Somebody's got to write a movie about this campaign, don't you think?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I think somebody will write a movie about it when it's all over, don't you think?
I think they have to. It's just too unbelievable.
Who would play
Trump and who would play Hillary? Oh, never mind.
Yeah, okay, we won't go there, right?
Okay. All right. But, boy, talk about drama.
talk about drama.
You've got
and
the
really,
movies... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if you wanted to make this stuff up that's going on in the nobody would believe you. They would say, "Wait a minute, nobody's going to buy this. This isn't real. This is unrealistic."
Go back to the drawing board. Start all over again. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Only we all know the truth of it, right?
The truth, stranger than fiction. Boy, is it ever. Movies are coming out, and we have to sort of divert ourselves a little bit of our attention. If we thought about this political mess all the time, people would go crazy. Well, maybe they are. But in any event, there are movies coming out, and one of them, you're going to tell us about them, Suicide Squad. I see a lot of print hype for Suicide Squad. I have no idea of what it's about. Do you want to talk about that one?
Yeah. This is another comic book movie. It's the third installment in what's called the DC Extended Movie Universe, the first two movies being Man of Steel and Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. But this movie, Suicide Squad, it's basically a riff on Robert Aldrich's The Dirty Dozen, the 1967 World War II movie about convicts turned commandos sent on a suicide mission. Well, in Suicide Squad, a secret government agency recruits six imprisoned supervillains to execute these black ops missions and save the world from a terrorist threat in exchange for a reduction of their prison sentences or maybe even clemency. I was surprised over all the critical wrath unleashed on Suicide Squad. While I didn't like it particularly, I don't think it was a bad film. I didn't find it particularly appealing for the same reasons I find most comic book superhero movies to be unappealing. You know, their generic tired feel, their preference for action and CGI special effects over story and character. But in the end, I think Suicide Squad delivers what it promises. It's a kind of a dark, nasty take on the superhero comic book genre. And even though it annoyingly delivers, I mean, the film was constantly punctuated by these pop songs spanning the 1970s through the 1990s, which were jarring to say the least, because they kept taking you out of the movie. It still delivers to the fans, I think, what it promises in a kind of a stylish, different kind of way.
And that's why the critics are talking about it, so it must have ruffled their feathers in some fashion, and not in a raspberry kind of way, but just if they found it disturbing, which is probably good.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what was the big spoonful of sugar to help this medicine go down for me was the presence of Viola Davis, who is a ferociously brilliant actress. She played the ruthless head of the government agency who recruits these supervillains, and she is so commanding and memorable, and she holds the screen every time she's on. So that, to me, was the best thing about the movie. Mostly I felt kind of old watching it until I got wind of some of the under 30 reviews who didn't like it either, but for reasons which made no sense to me given their predilection for this particular movie genre. But so that's kind of Suicide Squad in a nutshell. I didn't like it, but I didn't think it was a bad movie.
Right. You didn't think you wasted your time seeing it.
Right. Right.
And now this next one, I've seen a lot of spots on TV for it, and it's where Kevin Spacey plays the stuffy businessman who finds himself trapped in the body of his family's cat. It doesn't seem a little odd for Kevin Spacey to have that role considering some of his past work, I guess, but what did you think of it?
Well, I kind of had some hopes for Nine Lives, the movie's called, which were a tad dashed when the movie wasn't even screened for critics. That's always a red flag.
A dead giveaway.
Yeah, it's a family comedy. Like you said, it's about a businessman played by Academy Award winner Kevin Spacey, right? He's so preoccupied with his business and the making of money and outdoing his competitors that he neglects his family. So to make a long story short, he finds himself in the body of a cat called Mr. Fuzzy Pants, while recuperating from what could be this fatal accident. And the cat was purchased from none other than another Academy Award-winning actor, Christopher Walken, who plays the owner of Perkins Pet Shop, which is this mystical cat shop. And I don't even know where to begin to talk about how completely wrongheaded this movie is.
Is Christopher Walken sort of depicted as very crazy and odd and
yes,
all that?
Yeah. Yes.
How did I know that?
What's funny about that is his ubiquitous weirdness is really never maximized the way they could have. I mean, he's a kind of an odd.
Yes.
Yeah, he's an odd guy and he's an odd actor, but here's the thing. I love cats. I was predisposed to giving this movie props from the outset because I love cats. I own cats. I think cats are amazing and complicated creatures. But I think cat lovers are going to run from the theater screaming because if I was tempted to leave twice.
They didn't get the essence of what cats are about, did they? They just did kind of a cartoonish creature?
Pretty much. And that's the thing. It seemed to be made by people that hated cats. The movie starts out saying, I hate cats. And when the movie ends, they're saying they hate cats. If this is an extended commercial for the cat food investors, unsolicited advice. I want to say to investors in that stock, sell whatever stock you own because the value is going to plummet once people get wind of this movie. I want to be clever and say catastrophic is the best adjective to describe Nine Lives. But this is the cinematic equivalent of the coughing up of a giant furball.
Bingo. Okay, that point well taken. Don't think I'll be good. What about Don't Think Twice? It's all right?
Yeah, Don't Think Twice is a... oh, my gosh, it's this really poignant look at life through the prism of a six-member comedy improv group. It was written by, directed, and it stars Mike Birbiglia, and it's a very good movie. It's hard to compare this to any other movie I've seen, which is what makes it so special. We get an insider's look into what it takes to be a member of a comedy improv group, how creative and scary that can be, and it's a smart movie, and it's very poignant, and if you let it, it kind of nicely attunes you to your own neuroses and issues, I think in a very affectionate, insightful way. It's very thematically rich. It's about failure and about giving up and figuring out when it's time you should give up, which is in itself a very unusual theme for a film to take up. And it's about friendship and perspective and how what we want in life, how that can evolve and maybe how it should evolve if we remain true to ourselves. And in short, even though this is a movie about an improv group, something most folks probably have little, if any, experience in, there's lots of relatable stuff in Don't Think Twice, which is what in the end makes it a very beautiful and very human movie.
Now hold the thought, because we need to do this little break for a moment, but we're going to come back and get some more about movies coming out from Tim Sika, celluloiddreams.net, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That's it, celluloiddreams.net. I'm Christine Kraft. You're listening to KGO. Let's grab some traffic right now. I believe we're going to do that, and that would be, am I right, traffic? Lee Graham, of course. Hi, Lee. Well, what about that movie, Tim Sika? You've talked about it before. Tim Sika is my guest, celluloiddreams.net. We're talking about the movies that are coming out shortly here. But a little music there from Ghostbusters, the female version. Has it done well?
Yeah, it's raking in the bucks at the box office, and it's a good movie, mostly because of the strength of the four amazing comedians who star in the movie. These women are hilarious to watch, watching them interact and just go back and forth, and they're wonderful. They're funny. They're hilarious. They're smart. When the movie kind of goes to the big special effect scenes, it's not as effective. Relied on the women all the way through. But yeah, it's worth seeing. It's funny, and those actresses, Kristen Wiig, and the gal that does
Kate McKinnon.
Yeah, Kate McKinnon,
SNL.
Who does a mean Hillary Clinton.
Melissa McCarthy, yeah, right.
Melissa McCarthy and, oh, God.
Young African-American actress who
right, the morning show, the woman morning show.
Is
the one
The View?
That Barbara Walters was on. What's it
right,
called?
The View.
Oh, geez.
The View.
The View. Yes, that wonderful actress, comedian, host. Yeah, I can't remember
her
name.
You remember, though, Tim, you remember the kerfluffle when they were making this movie and starting to do the tour, the promotion of it.
Yeah.
Everyone said, oh, there's no way they can ever match the male version of Ghostbusters. They're going to fall flat on their face. It's going to be horrible. Everybody's going to laugh at them. And it turns out it's a hit.
Yeah, it's a hit, and it's also a funny movie and stands very strongly alongside the original. In a way, when you compare the two, there's a lot of stuff in the remake that's they're gonna call in better than the first one. The first one is kind of quaint when you look back on it. This one is much more sophisticated, I think, in its humor. So yeah, those were the fanboys that got all upset that they thought that their original beloved piece was being maligned. And you know,
we
people
can't
get
have this. Yeah, it's political correctness, they said, to put women in those roles.
Oh,
it's not right.
I know. People get so bent out of shape. And, you know, it doesn't – when they reimagine something or they remake something, it just means they're reimagining it or they're revisiting it. It has nothing to do with the original. And in many ways, it actually helps the original because it introduces the original to a whole new audience.
That's right. You're not dissing what went before. Okay,
right.
I want to ask you about another movie that's coming out, I guess, this week, Indignation. This based on a Philip Roth piece.
Right. This is this is probably the best movie I think to come out this week, and it's about the story set. As you said, it's a Philip Roth novel, the same name, and the story set mostly in Ohio in the early 1950s, and it's about a working class, a Jewish student played by Logan Lerman who leaves Newark, New Jersey, to attend this small college in Ohio. And there he experiences a sexual awakening with this wealthy, but we soon come to learn, complicated and neurotic young woman. He experiences anti-Semitism firsthand, and he goes toe-to-toe with the college's dean over the role of religion in academic life because he's Jewish and he's attending a Christian school. And the film is the directorial debut of James Seamus, who was Ang Lee's longtime producer. He produced films like Brokeback Mountain and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. This is first time he's directed a movie. And if this is any indication of his talent, he needs to direct more movies.
More.
And it's there's so many things that I liked about it. In terms of the period in which it takes place, the establishment of the time and the place is unexcelled. You really feel like you've been transported back to the United States Midwest in the 1950s. I know this probably might sound heavy, but it's heavy in a good way. The movie asks the question, what exactly is it that pivots or returns a person from existence to non-existence, and then it dramatizes that superbly. The cast was culled from the New York Theater talent pool. There's so many great actors in this, and though I suppose it never hurts to have a star as a means to market a piece, this movie once again proves that in the end, certainly in terms of effective storytelling, that you really don't need stars to make a good movie. You just need great actors, and there's great actors in this movie.
So we'll just say that Indignation is no Nine Lives.
that's a pull
quote. Which has
quote.
A star, and look at that. Yeah.
You know, one quick thing, too, I wanted to say about the movie, because it's worth noting. There's a superb dramatic centerpiece in Indignation. It's this 15-minute bout of verbal sparring in the dean's office between the student, Marcus, and the dean, which touches on topics of religion and upbringing and education and philosophy and politics and everything in between. And if what I'm saying catches on in any way, I think this scene may just prove to be the most talked about sequence in any American film released this year. And the movie, I mean, Indignation, it's a small movie. It needs a lot of love. And it's really, for me so far, and I've seen everything that's come out this year, it's one of the best films of the year so far.
Okay, I want to segue briefly, and you weren't really prepared to talk about this, but I know you know have thought about it most likely. Clint Eastwood, and this is, you know, of course, major director, maybe major movie star in his late 80s. And we remember him at the Republican convention, the Mitt
talking
convention.
Talking to the chair.
We talked to the chair, and he admits now that it didn't turn out so well, whatever. But he weighed in the other day, and he was very upset about political correctness. And I don't disagree totally with Clint Eastwood about some I think there's room to criticize political correctness.
Mm-hmm.
But he went sort of way over the top, and made the following statement, and I'm just wondering if you as a film critic and an observer of the Hollywood scene think that this will, it probably won't affect anything he does in the future, but your thoughts. He said that the Democrats had exploited Khizr Khan, that's the father of the soldier, the Marine who was killed, who gave the speech at the DNC convention, you know, challenging Trump about, have you ever read the Constitution? Here's mine right here, et cetera. So Mr. Eastwood said that the Democrats had exploited the, this is a quote from Clint Eastwood, he called Khizr Khan a poor slob. Now, and then went on to criticize Donald Trump's stupid choice of words at times, which has had a certain irony to it. But I'd just point out for the record that Mr. Khan is a lawyer with an advanced LLM from Harvard Law School. He's not a poor slob. And Mr. Eastwood did, I think, about 16 months at L.A. City College. So in terms of their educational skills, I'm not sure who the if either is a poor slob exactly, but... Has he just reached the point, and it's probably true, your thoughts, that Clint Eastwood can say and do anything pretty much, and it's not going to affect his ability to make movies?
Well, you know, Eastwood has a lot of understandable clout in Hollywood. I think as a director, I really do think he's an amazing artist. He's incredible, and he's like the Energizer Bunny, right? He makes his films seem to improve with age, and he's in his 80s. Who makes films in their 80s? Here's the thing. I think if his films continue to, this is not going to come as a surprise to anybody listening or anybody that knows the Hollywood scene or movie making, if his movies continue to make money, which they will probably continue to do, he pretty much probably will be able to continue to say whatever he wants, because in Hollywood, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, that's the coin of the realm, literally. And I doubt very much he's never been somebody who's terrible, much like Trump, never very apologetic or anything like that. Clint Eastwood, either take me as I am or don't take me at all. He probably won't say, well, that was a poor choice of call. To call Khizr Khan a poor slob may have been...
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I certainly wouldn't have done it, but I'm not Clint Eastwood, you know.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I used to worked in Carmel, and his wife at the time, this was in the 70s, Maggie Eastwood, used to come into Carmel Bay Company, and she was so charming, and she would buy things for the house. And we at the time thought, isn't it wonderful that he's married to somebody his own age?
Yeah. Yeah, he's he has a reputation or had a reputation as a serial womanizer throughout his career. But he must have good PR people, because that's not a very well-known fact in just sort of the general consciousness. But it's a fact in real life.
Well, there. Okay, a serial womanizer. That's one who has serial... Oh, never mind.
No, Tim, we don't want to go there.
I do not. That's a terrible thing. Thank you so much. It's always fun to talk to you and hear what you have to say about what the fare is out at the theaters, and I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Christine. It was great talking to you again.
We will again. Thank you very much.
Alrighty,
all right,
bye-bye.
That was Tim Sica. It's celluloiddreams.net. If you want to see his take on the movie fair that's out there in the world, that's where you want to go. Okay, in the next hour, we are going to have a guest with us, and it's someone that you may have heard in Northern California radio for many years. She lives back actually near Chicago, but in Michigan, and I promised her at the beginning of this political season, she's been on a couple of times with me, because I'm just on now and then, but in any event, I said we will do this even closer to the election. It's been a few months since I've had her on, and she's funny and bright, and we don't always... Lee Graham.